From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we begin today with Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, Juliana Stratton. She's an attorney and was active in issues of justice before being elected to the General Assembly in 2016. She was still in her first term as a state legislator when Governor J.B. Pritzker tapped her as his running mate. Today, Stratton's duties include heading the Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative and chairing several state councils, including ones focused on women and girls, rural affairs, and rivers in Illinois. In order to accommodate the Lieutenant Governor's schedule, she and I spoke earlier this morning. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
You recently attended the ceremony where President Biden formally designated the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley National Monument. One of the sites is the Roberts Temple Church, where Emmett Till's casket was left open so people could see the horror of his murder. Talk about the significance of this designation for the Bronzeville neighborhood in particular, and more broadly, just for history.
Well, first of all, I was honored to attend the ceremony where President Biden, alongside of Vice President Harris, where the president signed the proclamation that designated the national monument. And the monument, by the way, will both be in the Bronzeville community at Roberts Temple Church of God in Christ, as you mentioned, but a portion of it will also be in Mississippi, where 14-year-old Emmett Till was brutally murdered and lynched. And it was important for me. I'm a resident of Bronzeville. I've lived in Bronzeville for over two decades. I've been to the Roberts Temple Church of God in Christ and have seen it in my community and knew the story that really was the place where, because of Mamie Till Mobley's courage of opening the casket and saying the words, "I want the world to see what I saw and what they did to my son," it really was what sparked the civil rights movement. People were so horrified to see the brutality and what could happen. And, you know, I often think about the fact that for Black families that traveled from Mississippi and came north, or other southern states, and came north to places like Chicago and settled in communities like Bronzeville during the Great Northern Migration, you know, it was not uncommon to send your children back down south to spend the summers with their grandparents or their other family members, and, you know, to continue to enjoy that southern living. And unfortunately, that was an example where Mamie Till Mobley did the exact same thing so many parents did, and her son never came back. So it was truly an honor to be there, to know that that story will continue to be told as a national monument.
As you know, the Illinois Supreme Court recently upheld what's known as the Pretrial Fairness Act, which is set to end the use of cash bail for defendants who are awaiting their day in court. This was one of a number of changes to Illinois law that was pursued in the wake of the racial justice protests in the 2020. Can you talk about the significance of the court's ruling?
Well, it's highly significant. I mean, first of all, the Safety Act is really what I would consider to be a step in the right direction that not only will eliminate cash bail, but just create a more equitable Illinois for all of our residents. You know, I think about, and this is work that I have done for a number of years, even before becoming the lieutenant governor. I used to work, I led the Justice Advisory Council for Cook County. And we know that the Cook County Jail is the largest single site jail in the country. And what we knew then and what we know now for jails all across Illinois is that jails are pretrial detention centers, number one. People have not been convicted, by and large. They are people who are awaiting trial. And what we know is that money should not be the determining factor of whether a person should be released or detained while awaiting trial. At, you know, the current system, you know, if you are wealthy, and even if you caused a lot of harm to the community or to someone in particular, you could use your money to And that is not protecting public safety. And at the same time, we know that there were many people who were lingering in the jail simply because they were living in poverty. And even if it was a small, nonviolent offense, even if they called everyone they knew, they would not be able to get enough money to post a couple of $100 bond. So ending cash bail is really, you know, a way that we can really focus on public safety, highlight public safety, make sure that the decisions are being made not based on the amount of money somebody has in their account, but on other factors that will determine whether they're a threat to public safety. And that's really what the statute was designed to be. So I'm grateful for the hard work of the General Assembly, certainly the leadership of Governor Pritzker, but also so many advocates from communities all across our state, particularly, by the way, communities that were most impacted by crime and violence, who fought for this because they knew that this would be a fairer system for all.
You know, that's one aspect of what has really been an incredible amount of change in many levels of our criminal justice system over the past decade. I looked up, we went from a state prison population that peaked at more than 49,000 people back in late 2013. It was fewer than 30,000 this spring. We've also seen the election of progressive prosecutors like Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, and even state legislators put the brakes on what had been this steady ratcheting up of penalties for crimes. And yet, as I'm sure you've seen, there's also been a backlash to some of that, and disturbingly high murder rates in places like Austin and Garfield Park neighborhoods in Chicago and in parts of Rockford and Springfield and other downstate communities. Do you see the criminal justice reform movement of the past decade hitting a wall?
I don't see the reform efforts hitting a wall at all. Of course, there are going to be people who want to stay entrenched in the old way of doing things, which just sort of had a mindset of lock everyone up and throw away the key. That is what got us to where we are, or where we have been, you know, in recent years. But it did not make many communities safer. I mean, think about where we were in the 90s in terms of violence, where we saw some of the highest rates of violence in communities. And, you know, there's going to be that narrative around what we, you know, let's go back to those days. But as I said, you know, I'm a restorative justice practitioner, and it's something that is sort of deeply embedded in my values of how we address these issues. And what we know is we have to balance. I mean, number one, one of the things that we have done as a state is we have continued to invest and bolster our Illinois State Police Department. That has been an agency that we have continued to invest in. We are seeing larger cadet classes. We know that that is a part of the puzzle. We also know that as a piece of the puzzle, we have to invest in communities. So things like the Reimagine Public Safety Act, where we are investing in violence prevention and making sure that, you know, there are people in community from communities that are most impacted by violence who are serving as peacemakers and leaders in those communities to sort of allow for what I would call like a crisis response to sort of intervene from violence. I think about the work that we are doing through the Restore, Reinvest, and Renew program, or R3, and I chair that board, which came out of the legislation to legalize adult use cannabis. And, you know, through that, we are investing and have already invested almost $250 million, and that is the tax, 25% of the tax revenues from adult use cannabis sales. And that's going to communities most harmed by the war on drugs. So the point that I'm making is that we are at a place where we are seeing that it's not just incarceration that is a solution. We have to invest in our communities. We have to invest in evidence-based practices to interrupt violence. We have to help address the trauma, and we've invested in mental health. And by the way, it's also everything like investing in early childhood education, investing in healthcare, making sure that people can get to college, to community college for free now and have more access to money for college. All of those things are going to help build the communities that serve all Illinoisans. And that's what the governor and I are focused on doing.
And I remember the criminologist Dave Olson at Loyola a number of years ago said to me, you could, when the prison population was starting to come down, that you could really attribute a significant part of that to fewer drug arrests in just three Chicago police precincts. I can imagine progressive people cheering that. I can hear other people saying that's police not doing their jobs. I think of what Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, then Mayor Rahm Emanuel, said back in 2015 when he said, you know, that the protests and phone, cell phone videos and things like that had made police, quote unquote, fetal, fearing to do their jobs. I heard someone else recently describe that maybe as a form of quiet quitting by the police. I wonder how you think of the job police are doing today in the neighborhoods where public safety is most at risk.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to do is we have to listen to the voices of those in communities. I mean, I think sometimes there's a narrative that people don't want to work with the police, or that, you know, oh, we don't want police in our communities. That's not the narrative that I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is that people want to make sure that there is constitutional policing, that there is the kind of relationship between communities and law enforcement, where there's a level of trust, where people will understand, you know, there, again, as I said before, that there are different aspects and ways that we have expectations on how police engage with communities. And when you have communities, quite frankly, that haven't always viewed or historically have not always felt that that relationship has been positive, then we have to work on that. But what I also know is that what people want is they want to feel safe. And I also know that everyone deserves to feel safe. And so that is really the way that I look at it, that we have to continue to lift up the voices of communities to make sure that they can have a voice around what they are looking for and to, can work together in partnership to say, here's what safety looks like for us. This is the way that is a way that we will feel comfortable in engaging, because honestly, what people want is crime to be solved. And that, you know, law enforcement needs the tools to be able to do that. We have to make sure that the clearance rate goes up. You know, it's not just, and it's also, again, not just responding. I think we need to do more, and that's sort of what we have done at the state level in terms of what we are able to do, because policing, of course, is a local, more of a local issue. But what we have been able to do is invest in some of the initiatives that can help stop the violence in the first place. I mean, I think that is the everyone's goal. We don't want just a response. We want to make sure that violence can be prevented. And I think that that is something that law enforcement can also certainly help with. But again, that's in partnership with community.
I know we just have a couple of minutes left in our time together. I do also want to ask you about, I know you saw that Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, recently announced he was retiring from the Rainbow Push Coalition. As I'm sure most of our listeners know, he's one of the last living links to the civil rights era, right? He was on the balcony at the Lorraine Motel on April 4th, 1968, when Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Can you talk just briefly about the significance of Jesse Jackson's life and work?
You know, Reverend Jesse Jackson is known worldwide. I don't think that there's any place you could go and people not know Reverend Jesse Jackson and his role in, you know, advancing the civil rights movement. But also, of course, we know that he ran for president twice. And I had to dig into my my political button collection and found my Jesse Jackson for President buttons from 1984 and 1988. You know, he answered the call to serve, and he was a dedicated advocate for decades in communities, uplifting the most marginalized communities. And his work has certainly helped shape our state and our nation. But more personally, I serve as the first Black Lieutenant Governor in Illinois' history. And I remember as, way back when, not even before he ran, but when I was a child, and he had this saying that he would ask everybody to repeat, "I am somebody. I am somebody." And he wanted not just little Black girls and little Black boys, but anyone who has felt othered to repeat those words to kind of as an affirmation that regardless of some of the ways that we were being marginalized or the ways that society viewed us, we are someone, we matter. And he did that with communities all across our country. And, you know, I think about at a time right now where there are so many states that are trying to erase our history and to diminish people, erase people, to not allow us to tell the stories. I'm proud that here in Illinois, thanks to people like Reverend Jesse Jackson, we have done things like put an end to book banning. We have made sure the stories of marginalized communities are told. We've protected LGBTQ plus rights and reproductive rights. All of that comes from the kind of organizing that a trailblazer like Reverend Jesse Jackson has done. So I'm very grateful, and I was proud to celebrate his legacy. And I look forward to working with Reverend Freddie Haynes to continue this work.
Juliana Stratton is the Lieutenant Governor of Illinois. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.